Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge, and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. No set schedule, it's just whenever I finish the book, I think about it for a while and do the review, stick it up here in the podcast feed for everyone to listen to. So, not a lot of news since last time I spoke with this microphone in my living room here. Except that, you know, I've been at home, I've been a bit ill as well recently. I actually finished the book that I'm going to be reviewing today last Thursday, so it's been almost almost a week between finishing reading the book and actually getting around to doing the review, because I've just been really busy with different stuff and a bit ill actually as well. But you know, the combination of busy catching up with my social life and being a bit ill means I've sort of put off doing this review. Not because, you know, I didn't want to do the review, it's just I've been just been doing other bits and pieces. Anyway, thanks a lot for all the emails that I've got. I've seemed to get a little bit of an upswing in emails, which is good. Also, it's been good to find out that the reasons why people seem to have have been started listening, because I asked for people why did they start listening to this podcast, and it seems like the main reason people listen to this podcast is they go on iTunes and they search on iTunes and say, I want something to do with science fiction, and that was about it. But I did put a post up on my blog and a post on the sfbrp.com sort of blog website thing about the total number of SFBRP episodes per month. So if you want to see a little graphic of how more and more people are downloading, not just the latest episodes, but all of the episodes going back, lots of people email me and say, yes, I've now listened to all of the episodes in a row from the beginning to end, or in no order, or something like that, which to be honest is much more than I've done, because generally what happens is I finish the review, press stop, edit it, put it up, and that's it. I never listen back to them. It's just the way it goes, really. I should actually listen back, because there was the one that I did when I was drunk a few episodes ago, which lots of people seem to enjoy. So I might listen back to that, because I can't actually remember anything I said because I was drunk at the time. And also, yeah, it's good emails that I got some emails about my books that I've written as well, and my novels and novellas that I've written and put up online as well. People seem to be enjoying them. So just a quick nod in that direction. If you enjoy my reviewing and you think you like my taste in science fiction, why not check out my own novels? You can download them for free from my website. Just go to lukeburridge.com/fiction.html, and that is where you can find them and download them as ebooks for free. So, yes, the book that I'm going to be reviewing today is called Rainbow's End. It's by Verna Vinge, and it was published in 2006. It won the Hugo Award for that year, or the year after, I'm not quite sure, but it definitely won a Hugo Award sometimes. And I listened to this as an audiobook. It's around about 15 hours long, and Goodreads.com says that it's about 400 pages long as well. So it's not a hugely long book, not compared to some of the audiobooks that I've listened to. It's a pretty decent length. 15 hours is a pretty decent length for a lot of entertainment there as well. And the reason I read it is because I've read other Verna Vinge books, and they're all some of my favourite science fiction books. So I thought, well, what can go wrong when reading this book? Because I think actually that Verna Vinge's The Peace War that I reviewed quite early on in my in this podcast is still one of the highest rated books that I've read. So here we go. So the world that this book is set in, unlike the spaceships and in Fire Upon the Deep and The Deepness in the Sky and the post-apocalyptic world of The Peace War, this is this book is set around about 20 years into the future. It's set a lot in, I think, San Diego, but the whole world is split into different factions, let me put it this way. The world is like China is a country, and the United States is a country, and then there's Euro-India or something like that, which is this other kind of faction. And Euro-India is pretty much anywhere that isn't China or the USA. I think Africa's its own place, and South America as well. But, you know, we've got these big sort of like world-spanning superpowers all vying against each other and stuff like that. So also that's like more the political kind of setup at the time. The reason it's like this, I'm not quite sure, but there's been lots of terrorist attacks in the future as well. This book was obviously written with the attacks in New York and in Washington on September 11th, 2001 in mind, but they have this other way of referencing terror attacks in the past. They'll say, "Oh yeah, we haven't lost a city since Chicago 5 years ago." So there's obviously this general fear going around. So in the future, especially in America, there is ubiquitous computing. Everyone, everything has got a computer in it. Everything's controlled by computers. There's no paper. Nobody uses paper anymore. Everyone uses computing devices. One of the main things that they use is reality, like alternative reality overlays. They put in these contact lenses, and they can overlay reality, different realities over the ones that they can actually see. This has been done quite a lot in science fiction, which is and it's an old idea, but this is sort of really taking it to an extreme kind of level. And it's not just one alternative reality overlay, that you can always choose from many, many, many different realities, which is an interesting idea. Like I say, nothing new in science fiction there, but done really well in this book. There's also, let me put it this way, in the USA, the Department of Homeland Security seems to have taken over pretty much most different layers of reality, not in a intrusive way, but in a ubiquitous way. So in North America, there's Department of Homeland Security approved electronics, and that's all you're allowed to run. You're not allowed to run any other kind of electronics there as well. What else have we got? Oh, yeah, medical advances. So lots of people are being brought back from senility, I'm not quite sure the word I was wanting to say there. And lots of people who had cancer, that's been cleared up. Lots of cripples, that's been cleared up. Lots of things that they can't quite cure yet, but, you know, they're pretty much getting to it. So as long as you're not too old and too ill within the next 20 years into the future, you can be patched up and rejuvenated, and you can get given a fresh body, a pretty fresh body, and you can get your mind working again and everything like that. What else have we got now? So yeah, of course there is a lot more descriptions of technology in this book, but those are the sort of the broad strokes of the world that this is set into. So lots and lots of layers of alternative reality, lots of robotics and things like that. I'll get onto more of the technology later on in the podcast. However, I did have a little bit of a problem with the world. I thought it was a little bit too advanced for just 20 years in the future. Maybe if it was like 50 years in the future, or maybe just 35, you know, split the difference, 35 years in the future, I would have found it a lot more believable. But there's a lot of stuff that it was talking about, everyone in the world just seemed to be happy, or seemed to just presume that everything was going great and everything was really cool, and that's just the way the world should be. Sort of very passive about it, which seems to be what society, let me put it this way, it seems to me that society would need a little bit more time to sort of bring itself to that point, you know, sort of get comfortable in that point. Sure, change does happen, and of course, you know, Werner Vinge is a big sort of proponent or a big believer in the idea of the technological singularity, and this is going, oh yeah, it's going to get quicker and quicker and quicker. Now, I don't think technology will move quite that fast, that there literally won't be any books anymore, any paper anymore, anything like that. It would be nice to see, but I'm not quite convinced that it was 20 years is good enough, which again, I don't mind in an unbelievable reality. However, I think if he'd have just set it a bit later, it would have been more believable. However, in the end, I just went with it. I just said, okay, I don't think about the timing. I'm just going to think about this is a future world, sort of, as it goes. Okay, so the plot goes like this. In the future, at the very beginning of the book, there's a little sort of extract from a news source. I can't remember exactly what it is, but there's like this, because the thing is, I read this as an audiobook, or listened to it as an audiobook, so normally at this point I could flick back through and find the passage or find the part in the book and just see exactly what the opening lines of the book were, but now it's a little bit tricky. I've actually noticed that little bit of a diversion here, tangent here. For the past few months, all of my reading has been done on electronically, so either listening to audiobooks or reading ebooks. So just going back a few minutes when I was talking about the world and how nobody's going to use paper anymore, yeah, that is probably going to be quite true in lots of ways, but I found it really difficult And this is what people have been emailing me as well. They say your reviews seem to be getting through them a bit quicker. It's like, yeah, because I'm not making as many notes, because normally when I'm reading a book, I'd have like a piece of paper and I could write notes down. Or even when I'm reading an ebook, I'll often sort of like on the stands at ebook read, I can just press the corner and make little notes as I go along. But with audiobooks, because I'm doing other things, I am paying full attention, but it's difficult to make notes and to try and think of it. And that's why I sort of have to think back and spend a bit longer thinking about it afterwards, rather than, you know, because I'm not concentrating only on that as I go through. So maybe actually in the future, like I'm doing now, paper books won't be needed. But I think, you know, just for general working stuff out, jotting stuff down, paper is still still going to be very, very important. Anyway, what was I saying? There was something going on here. Oh, yeah, yeah. Anyway, at the beginning of the book... Wow, I'm really off. I should make more notes so I don't have to go off on so many tangents here. So, the beginning of the book, there's this virus that goes out, and it's not really that important. It spreads around everyone in the world, but nobody is really... it doesn't actually harm anyone, you know. People just get a bit of a flu, and then it goes away. But then it turns out that through this experiment with lots of people watching a football game, there's this advert which is played, and people are sort of mind controlled into buying the thing from this advert. And the way that it works is that the Euro India intelligence agency, they get all the analysts on it, and they work out actually what's happening is that there is some kind of mind control thing that only people who have caught this virus are then can then be sort of shown to be controlled by this mind control. So they work out that this mind control virus and technology is being developed in a lab in San Diego, California. However, we soon work out, I'm not spoiling anything because this is like literally in the first opening chapter or second chapter in the book. We found out that Alfred Vaz, who is the Indian intelligence officer, he wants to see what's going on there. But we also find out that he's the person who has developed the mind control virus in the first place, because he wants like world peace. And he thinks, okay, the only way to protect everyone, to stop all these terrorist attacks, to watch the watchers, watch the watchmen or whatever it's going to be, is this mind control thing. So he's a really good sort of kind of villain who's working against his own means. Because he's, like you say, he's head of intelligence. He's trying to find himself, but he's also the guy on the inside trying to find himself. It's a bit like the film The Departed, where, you know, at one point, I think it's Matt Damon's character is going, "Hey, this is awesome. I'm the person who's been sent in to find me." And that's a bit what happens with Alfred Vaz. He's running the operation to go in and find himself, or to see if his own operation, this medical research, is actually happening there in San Diego. But what happens is that they contract someone to run things for them on the ground. So the Euro Indian intelligence agency can have full deniability if they're caught by the Americans, and the agent that they go through is this this underworld operative called Rabbit, and it's Rabbit's job to hack inside the medical facility and find out what's actually going on in there. Not really giving anything away, like I say, that's all told right at the very beginning of the book. That's the setup for the book. And I was thinking, oh, this is going to be great. It's going to be this sort of international terrorism and all this kind of stuff, because I really didn't know anything about the book as I went into it. And I thought, oh, this is going to be good because we're going to have the different levels going on here. It's great. However, what happens then is that it's sort of like the book takes a weird turn, and suddenly we leave all of that behind, and we do sort of touch on it again a few times later in the book, but the vast majority of the story, it follows the story of a character called Robert Gu and his family. We get to Robert Gu, who's like this student at a school called Fairmont High, and he and his all his family, they all have different connections to each other, and also different connections to this medical facility that is close by to where they live. And so, like I said, remember the alternative realities. So the idea is that what will Rabbit do to get people inside this medical facility? And so that's the way that he does it, is by using the different alternative realities to pose as different people, to pose as different characters, to then offer people differently. So like, oh, you want to do this? Great. Well, if you help me out in this way, I'll give it to you. Or in much more interesting ways and much more subtle ways, he will influence people towards his own goal. And I made a note here actually afterwards, and I was thinking this is really the opposite of the book Demon. If you remember the book Demon, the thing that I found so preposterous about it is there was this one guy who made this plan, wrote a computer program, died, and then his computer program executed his plan. However, the computer program that he must have developed would have been, you know, literally it would have been predicting the future. Now, what's interesting about this is that we... is that Rabbit, this operative, he doesn't make a plan and then carry it out, which is a bit strange because that's why I wasn't really quite sure where the novel was going. What you actually see through the characters he's manipulating is how he finds them in the first place, how he works out what they want, and then how, you know, through lots of different means, he actually gets what he wants out of them. But it's sort of like this very flowing, self-learning kind of process that, you know, he doesn't know how he's going to get inside the medical facilities, but you think, okay, this way, it, you know, the way that I'm going to do it is it's just going to work. And this is one of the main themes of the book that I want to get onto later, is that it's all about being adaptive, and it's all about being, you know, being able to respond in creative ways to situations, not knowing everything in advance, not having everything planned out, but just going going through with it. So like I say, we have the main story with Robert Goo. However, like I said, I just mentioned this before, we don't see it all from Rabbit's perspective. We see it from the perspective of Robert Goo and his family and his friends, all their point of views, you know. So as the reader, we know what Rabbit is doing. We know what Rabbit knows, and we know what this, you know, Alfred Vaz knows, and we know what these other people who are actually controlling the situation know. But the characters don't know that. But because we know, we can see everything through their point of view. And that's what I really like about like the limited point of view that we get from the different characters, because their reality is only sometimes the real reality. And this is one of the main themes that I got from the book, is that the whole point of this book is that there's different levels of alternative realities. And yet the reality that they live in isn't even their real reality, isn't the real reality, because it's even that is being controlled by Rabbit and Alfred Vass, and also the, you know, Department of Homeland Security and all these other people. So that's it, you know, computers, alternative reality technology, controlling people into follow plans and stuff without their knowledge, even though we know that's going on as readers. So the plot is actually pretty good. I found it a little bit straightforward in places, but I was, you know, I read the book quite quickly, or listened to the book quite quickly over just two and a half days or whatever it was. So I was really going along with it. It's not the most complex plot, and I was a little bit of ahead of it in some places, but I didn't mind that because I thought it was very well done. And I don't really want to give too much away, but there's, you know, there's a lot of stuff happens, even though it is quite slow paced in some places. Anyway, moving on to the characters. What I really like about Werner Vinge is a bit no nonsense about the characters. They're quite complex in some ways, but not in other ways. So, like, generally, what they want to do is quite simple or quite plain, and yet they're in the middle of this world changing situation. So you see this world changing situation, this whole sort of mind control drug kind of thing going on here, which is a big thing in like Fire Upon the Deep. There's this whole thing about the zones of thought, and that's being, you know, this zone of imbecility is being expanded across the galaxy, and it's down to this few guys on this one planet to try and sort everything out. So the whole idea of, you know, like just real people, normal people going about their everyday lives but being caught up in something much bigger is quite interesting. Now, as I said, our main character is Robert. He is a poet, and I said he was a student, but he's actually a very old guy. He's like in his 70s or something. I can't remember exactly how old he's meant to be. And he was a poet, like world-renowned poet, the Shakespeare of his time or something like that. And he got Alzheimer's disease and was in and was pretty much mindless for around about 10 years. But due to him being his diseases all lining up and then being able to cure all of his diseases, he managed to open his eyes again, look around the world new, and he hasn't even been in contact with the world for 10 years. And even before then, he was like this reclusive a poet without any friends or anything like that. So he is the guy who's displaced in time. He's like the guy in the you know, he's our stranger in a strange land. No, not really. No, he's more of like the guy who is from our time, out of time, he's the Justin Cord from The Unincorporated Man, let me put it that way. So we're learning this new world through his eyes, which is pretty good, because generally the world building, you know, I mentioned it before, but a lot of it is just like, this is the way it is, or we just get dropped into it. There's lots of jargon, there's lots of words, there's lots of characters, lots of things that we don't we're not really meant to understand straight away. I mean, a lot of it you can pick up if you know, if you're a general geek, if you know about computers and stuff, you can pick up a lot of it straight away. But it's good to have someone like Robert Goo to be able to have things explained to him. And also, he's our main character kind of protagonist too, because he's got like a main story, even though he's just one of the characters, one of the many characters that that Rabbit and Alfred Vass are manipulating to their own ends without his knowledge. He is very much our main character, and he's the one who has like the main sort of character arc. He starts off as this grumpy kind of old guy and nobody liked him. He's really kind of like unsympathetic character to begin with, but I could sort of see it coming straight away that what he's going to do, he's going to learn to be much better, he's going to use technology to become more social and things like that, and that is sort of what happens throughout the book as well. And the rest of the main characters, all the other people that he knows, it's pretty much their job to cope with this old crotchety guy who doesn't really fit in with the world. So you get his son, who really, really doesn't like him, and his daughter-in-law, who just ignores him a lot. You got his granddaughter, Mary, who is actually at the same school as him. She also goes to Fairmont High School, where he is being re-educated in the ways of the modern world as well. And you get the Juan, who is a kid that he meets at school, and you get like these his old professor friends from the local university. Lots of different characters like that. Now, not all of them are very interesting characters, but they all seem to play a role, mostly because they all have strong motivations, which makes for good characters, which makes for interesting characters, and it makes for a good plot too, or interesting writing too. But also it makes a big difference in this novel is because one of the main things of this novel is that Rabbit and Andrew Vass are undermining people's motivations and turning them to their own needs. Now, of course, it's not completely obvious right from the very beginning of the book. I mean, it is to the reader or the careful reader, where you very quickly pick up what's happening there, and you can see who Rabbit is through all these different people that they meet and taking different controls. But it's interesting that very quickly, with all of the different characters, you immediately know what their motivation is, which means that when Rabbit comes in and starts changing the motivations, you can go, okay, now I can see where it's going. And as soon as someone gets like this character flaw, or you understand what's going on with the character, you're like, okay, that's what's happening there. Oh, and that's what's happening there as well. There is also this love story as well, but I don't want to give too much away about that. What else have I written down about the characters? I just put here as well. Yeah, a huge part of the story is Robert finding his place in the world and his place in his family. And the whole rest of the story, or most of the rest of the story, with the whole sort of mind control virus and Alfred Vass and his double-crossing treachery that we find out right at the very beginning, is sort of resolved through this framework of Robert finding his place in the world. Even though, like I say, that's not the main "the world is going to end" kind of story, he does play a part in it. And yes, and this other parallel story is tied in very well with it as well. So, good characters, interesting stuff. Not the most complex, not the most interesting. However, very suitable for the plot and very well tied in with the themes of control and motivation and things like that. So, technology. Now, this is Verna Vinge. He is a big sort of technology kind of guy. This is where the book can really shine or can fall flat, depending on, you know, if he was a good author or wasn't. Thankfully, he's got a lot of really, really good ideas. Now, I don't actually believe all of these ideas, or I didn't find them all believable, but they're all very, very interesting. Now, I could, of course, talk for around about 3 or 4 hours about all the different technologies and my views on them and the stuff that's presented in this book, because there really is that much to talk about. There's loads of different stuff here, so I'll just touch on a few that stood out. Of course, the whole idea of the augmented reality kind of stuff, that's very, very well done, very, very interestingly done. I really like the idea of the different levels of augmented reality, or the different subsets. Like, you can see the same scene in lots of different ways. Again, that's been done in science fiction many times before, but it seemed to be very well documented here, and very real and believable. And the way that it's a lot of the stuff is augmented, the augmented reality is augmented even further by robotics and touch feedback, haptic feedback, whatever it's called. So if you see, at one point they go to this dinosaur park, like this Cretaceous. No, it's not actually that. It's actually a general park, like a general kids theme park. But you can make up your own theme, or you can select your own theme. And one of them is called Cretaceous Park, or something. It's some kind of play on Jurassic Park. I can't remember the exact words. I think it was called that so it doesn't infringe on the Spielberg intellectual property rights or something like that. I can't remember exactly what it is. But so they go there, and one of the kids gets swallowed by a dinosaur, and he actually does get swallowed by a robotic thing with a dinosaur overlay cast around it. Whereas if you actually took out your augmented reality contact lens device, you would actually just see like a generic robot kind of thing there, which can be used in lots of different ways, and that whole kind of idea is quite interesting. Another kind of thing that I liked is the idea of analytic groups working on problems. Whenever like the US Robert's, I forgot to mention this, Robert's son, Bob Goo, is actually a commander in the US Department of Homeland Security's Armed Forces Rapid Deployment Division or something. So he's, you get lots of intelligence from all the machines, but really it takes the humans to think it all out. So you get all these different groups of people working together, editing each other's thoughts or editing each other's presentations, and then like more layers of editors and analysts and analysis going on as well, and it's all being passed up to him, so he gets like the distilled edited highlights of the probable outcome of the situation as seen by thousands of analysts working all the way around the world, in some cases, or in this case actually just in America, but with other groups all the way around the world, all sort of like trying to find holes in each other's. And it's not just governments as well, there's like this whole idea of collaborative programming. So the idea is that you see a picture, and you have maybe 20 people looking at the same picture or the same figure, and they say, okay, let's make this figure do something, let's make this figure walk across the room. Now, you could just say, okay, we'll employ generic figure walking across the room walking program A2 male slow gait go, and it would just walk across the room, but it'd be really mechanical. However, you say, okay, I'm going to just control the gait, whereas you control the arms, you control the shoulders, I'll control the mouth as well, this other person can control the way it looks, the other person can control the facial expression, and all these different kinds of things, and you actually can like collaboratively work on something. And it's like a real-time kind of wiki situation, like Wikipedia. It's like everyone works on something at the same time, and they all put it together, and in the end you get this very interesting thing. But this has to happen, this sort of real-time collaborative programming happens, like I say, in real time. It's quite an interesting kind of idea, and I'd love to actually see this happen. I'd love to see this go as well. You know, this whole book is full of really good ideas that you go, like, yeah, give it another 10 years, and somebody could be making real money off this. And this is actually quite like about science fiction in a way, you know, these sort of like near future, hey, how about this idea, hey, how about this idea, how about this idea. And Verna Vinge does that really well. What else have we got here? Oh yeah, also along with that, this different collaborative programming, augmented reality with robots, and the augmented reality as well, there's this great piece in the book where you have like this belief circle battle. So you have your own reality, and this other group of people have their own reality. And what you want to do is decide which reality influences the real world the most. So at one point there's this library, and one group wants to control the libraries, you know, the way it displays the books and all that kind of stuff. And another group also wants to control the library. So they have this circle, this belief circle battle slash riot. And this is actually, you know, quite an interesting part of the novel, where there these two groups who represent two sort of different collections of intellectual property and their outlook on life or their aesthetic view, and whoever can do the grandest, most impressive things in this face to face battle, this riot that's going on, can sort of take over running the library. And it's really interesting. It's described in a lot of detail. However, for so much time that was spent on it, it really was just a diversion as something else was happening in the book. This was sort of like the main diversion that was sort of planned to go ahead. And it's almost like a short story in its own right. It could have been quite an interesting novella, just the story of the idea, belief circle battle taking place at the library. And it really got in the way. It was like a big action set piece in the middle of the book, which didn't really need to be there. It's like, it was like a special effect. And the idea was good, but it didn't really fit so well in this book. Anything else could have like easily replaced it. Well, it could have been good enough just to be there, but to explain it fully, it took a lot of time. And yet at the same time, it didn't really need to be, you didn't really need to spend that much time in it in the book. What else do we have here in the technology? Oh, there's loads and loads of stuff here. Oh yeah, the same library. There was an idea to shred all of the books. They'd just go through and shred all of the books and scan them at the same time as shredding them, because that was going to be the fastest way to do it. Now again, this is one of those things which was like an interesting idea. However, if there's that much information and we're 20 years in the future, wouldn't Google Books have already sorted all that? Now, I'm not quite sure what Google Books was up to in 2006 when this book was released. This, you know, this Rainbow's End book was released. However, I would like to think, and no, actually, I know that was there because it's actually mentioned in this book that Google was indexing books and things, but they're like, oh no, this is a lot quicker and a lot more, a lot easier. But I'm thinking, if you've got all these robots and you've got like this ubiquitous computing, and if you can scan this and scan that and remove and work with different levels of reality in all these different ways, surely that would all be done too far. So that was a bit strange. What else did I make a note of here? Oh yeah, micropayments. Verna Vinge seems to think that micropayments are going to work for like characters and intellectual property and use of entertainment and stuff like that. I'm not so sure that micropayments will work, but that's what he's going for. I'm much more of a believer in subscription kind of ideas, that you subscribe to this and then you have access, and you subscribe to that and then have access, rather than every time you look at this piece of intellectual property, you give assent to that person. I'm not quite sure that's going to work, but hey, it's a nice idea, and it's like that's the way that the world works in the future with Verna Vinge. So I'm guessing I'll just go with it. What else? Oh yeah, and it's a whole thing about in school they have these class projects and they make things, really things, and they have all these little modules with no user serviceable parts inside, but you can put together these modules, these different Lego brick kind of things, to make new technologies. And they use them in school, and but the thing is, these school kids seem to make like very interesting new inventions, which I'm thinking, if it really is that new, and if it is that interesting, and if it is that profitable, and if it is that useful, surely it would have already been invented by somebody not a school child. So there was this whole sort of like imbalance there, actually. There's lots of these cool inventions that the characters in the book seem to be making, and I'm thinking, no, if that was actually a problem that they say it is, somebody would have already solved it by now. Someone, you know, or it wouldn't be solved by now, and a character who has been to school for a few years probably wouldn't be able to do it, and maybe someone who's been computer programming for 20 years and has done that all their lives, maybe they would be able to do it rather than just some school kid. So there is quite a bit of imbalance in the book, you know, like they have the library shredding, but they don't have robots that can just sort through a library and scan it all, and, you know, is speed really that important with the, you know, in, it's just a bit strange, you know, not all of the technology gels together. However, as a whole, the amount of new technology and new ideas and even old, like new spins on old ideas that we have here is, I found, very interesting. So, reading and writing, not reading and writing, the writing style and the reading of the ebook as well. Not, actually, as I said before, not a whole lot of special stuff going on here, you know. There's lots of cute references to modern culture and to other science fiction and things like that. But overall, I didn't find anything about the writing too amazing. Now, I can't actually remember too much about Verna Vinge's other books. I definitely remember in The Peace War, I thought it was very sort of straightforward telling of a story, and I did actually quite enjoy that. And it seems to be that's what it have here. Like, nothing too amazing going on lyrically with the writing, which is a pity, considering the main character is an award-winning, like a Nobel laureate poet. And I was thinking, wait a second, he should be thinking a little bit more poetically, but then he doesn't. And he just gets on and tells the story. And I'm thinking, maybe I really want to see more of this sort of interesting language from this viewpoint character. And it says, oh, he told this story, or he said this poem, and everyone was really spellbound by it and thought it was amazing. I didn't really find anything about that in the writing of the book itself. So what else have we got here? Oh yeah, the plotting was a bit strange. Now, as I said, good start, sort of like a whole thing going on there with, you know, the sort of like maniacal kind of Bond villain kind of guy going, I'm going to control the world through mind control and everything's going to be safe. And I was like, okay, that's great. And so I thought, okay, reading a thriller. And then it went into this slower part and of, you know, more character-based stuff. And then halfway through, suddenly this thing happens, and I realize that it's the climax of the book. Or if it's not the climax of the book, it just doesn't end. And it just goes on and on and on at all for about a quarter of the book, actually maybe a bit more than quarter of the book, from around about halfway through to a few chapters before the end, is all this sort of like long kind of techno thriller action packed finale going on. And it just took ages and ages and ages. So, which is a bit strange, because I normally in these books you sort of get like something at the beginning, like development through, a twist halfway through, and then it goes on, and you get like the climax, and then sort of like the after. But it was just what am I trying to say? Yeah, it was just a little bit sort of lopsided, and then afterwards it goes okay, and then afterwards this happened, and then afterwards this happened, and then this happened. Oh. And now there's this epilogue, so that happened afterwards at all. Now, none of this was boring, you know, none of it was uninteresting. It was just a little bit sort of lopsided, you know, looking back. When I actually finished the book, I looked back and thought, wow, that, you know, the stuff that was meant to happen at the end. And then also at the end of the book, there's some big questions, or there's some identities of some characters. There's some characters they just sort of drop off the map, and I'm thinking, okay, that's going to be for the sequel. We'll find out more about that in the sequel, which is a little bit disappointing. Now, I don't mind that those characters, their loose ends weren't tied up, but it would have been interesting, might as well give this away, we never find out who Rabbit is, for example. And it's just like at the end of the book, that's just one of the examples where I'm thinking, we could have known who Rabbit was. I mean, you could have told us. I have some suspicions. There's different options who Rabbit could have been. And actually, he says, oh, you know, I dropped loads of hints, you know, throughout this adventure, and nobody's worked out who I am yet. And it's like Rabbit in the book is saying, hey, haven't you worked out who I am yet? And I'm thinking, well, you're Verna Vinge who's writing this, so I've got an idea who you think I think I should think you are next. But also, I think you might be China, because at the end of the book, it's like China is like comes out on top in many ways. And I'm thinking, well, maybe Rabbit is using all of like the analytic prowess of the entire Chinese people, of like working out how he can be like this main operative and run things. And you know, America is represented in the book, in Indo China is represented in the book, and like more neutral people are represented in the book, you know, like the civilians are represented in the book, but China, this whole other big faction that we talked about, isn't represented in the book. I was thinking, well, maybe that's Rabbit. So I'm not quite sure if it's meant to be an artificial intelligence, or the like the self-emergent nature of the internet, which is combating against Vaz's you know, mind control kind of thing that goes there. So it's a bit strange. What else? Oh yeah, also there was these characters that popped up, and I was like, am I meant to know who this person is? And they're talking about the history of the characters, though I'm meant to know who the character is. And it reminded me a bit about watching if you've seen the series Firefly. Now, I didn't know really Firefly existed, and then I saw this trailer for a film called Serenity, and I thought, oh well, I'll just get that out of the video shop. So I, you know, I got it out, and I enjoyed it, I guess, but there was these characters who were popping up, and I was just like, oh, it's not going to be that guy, is it? And then he turns up, and they're like, oh, fancy seeing you here. And I'm like, who is this person? So that happened a few times in this book. So I went onto Wikipedia, and it says, the book is set in San Diego, California, in 2025. In a variation of the fictional world Vinge explored in his 2002 Hugo Award-winning novella, Fast Times at Fairmont High, and 2004 Synthetic Serendipity. Oh, Synthetic Serendipity. I didn't work that out. Yeah, that ties into one of the main themes of the book. Anyway, so I guess the characters who sort of popped in the book, who didn't have a big impact on the plot, who we were sort of, it seemed like we were just checking in on them to see if they were okay, or we were told a little bit about this one character who just pops up, who's a student at the school, and I was just like, wow, for someone who seems to be quite important, she really doesn't do very much here, does she? Maybe I've just given something away there. But no, I haven't, because she doesn't do anything in this book. Oh yeah, and the reading of the book was by, I mentioned it before, I wrote it here on the notes here, Eric Cogner. He was the reader of the book. Pretty good as well. No complaints there at all. The one little complaint that I had was that there's quite a lot of like secret messaging or hidden messaging or instant messaging going on between characters. And it was always like, from this person to that person and that person. But they would name all of the names each time. Now, if you're going to write a book, that's great to put it in a book so that you can read because you're actually reading text. Whereas what I'd really like is in an audio book is for them to sort of like just do a little edit, just do a little rewrite, because it wasn't much of the book in these like instant messages being sent backwards and forwards, but it did happen enough to be a little bit confusing when it did happen. So why don't they just say, like, Miri sent a secret message to Juan and Robert, this, 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 and this. And then Robert sent one back saying this, 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 and this. Or it's like, this, 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 she instant messages to this person. You know, and they could have just sort of written it more as dialogue. Not like, not for the actual book, but just for the narration. For narration purposes over only, because, you know, that little rewrite would have been interesting. And also, final thing about the writing, I thought there was a mistake in the title because it was Rainbow's End, but with no apostrophe. But then it's actually mentioned in the book that it's the name of the retirement home that Robert might be sent to. It's called Rainbow's End, and he sort of quite clunkily sort of says, oh, it's called Rainbow's End, but there's no apostrophe in it, so this isn't the Rainbow's End, this is where Rainbow's End. And I'm like, yeah, okay, you could have been a little bit more subtle about that. I actually quite liked it when I noticed that about the book, and I worked out why Rainbow's End was called Rainbow's End and the character didn't. But then again, he is a poet, so he should have done. Anyway, I'm not sure. So come on to the last section that I normally do here in this old podcast. After what, my 93 episodes now, I should remember what comes up at this point. The themes of the book. Now, I already mentioned this, which is the whole sort of like working in alternative reality and what is reality. There's some really great sections in the book in this way, which is like this guy, his personality or his representation, his avatar, is like hijacked by these other people. And he knows it's happening, but he's like, oh, no, I don't want to deal with it. You know, it's sort of the whole kind of, oh, I know there's a virus on my computer, but it's working okay at the moment, and I don't want to lose anything, so I'll just keep working with it. But then he actually admits at one point that he enjoyed his experience of the world when he was being controlled by other people, because when he was, like, having a conversation, he was a better conversationalist when other people were hijacking his personality and hijacking his representation of the world. He was asking more interesting questions, and he was more interesting to other people when he was being controlled, you know, at a his avatar in this alternative reality was being controlled at that level, which I thought was really, really interesting. So this whole idea of this alternative reality being a layer between who we are and what we experience and who we really are and what we really experience is really interesting, made especially even more interesting by the generic science fiction evil Bond villain, like generic threat which is going on, which isn't actually a generic threat. It ties in completely with this main theme here, and this is what I really enjoyed reading about. The main threat of the book is this virus. By once you got this virus, they can control your mind. They being this, well, they being, you know, Alfred Vaz, and we find that out right at the beginning of the book, but, you know, the generic they, the government agency which is controlling everyone, like this through mind control, direct mind control, and you have this virus and they'll make the thing, make you buy things when you don't want to, and make you, you know, do this when you don't want to. However, these characters are like wanting to stop this, or they're fighting against it, even if they don't know they're fighting against this. It most, you know, for most of the characters don't know they're fighting against this, or fighting for this, or doing anything, you know, against this. And that's the point. They don't know what they're doing already. They have complete control. Other people have complete control over them without the mind control virus, without like the people getting the virus and then getting the pattern on the TV to make them buy stuff and stuff. Society is already there. Rabbit shows how easily people can be controlled just by saying, hey, I'll pay you to do this. And they're like, oh, okay. And it's like, hey, do you want to get your, you know, do you want to get your position at the university back? Hey, just do this and I'll do it and I'll make it happen for you. Oh, great. That's no problem. This other character, hey, you've got this speech impediment. Do you want me to sort that out? Tell you what, just do this and I can do it. And he's like, oh, okay, no problem. You don't need mind control viruses. There's so many different ways to control people. And that's already without the alternative reality. That is just through like the base desires of people. Hey, you want money? Great. You want to, you know, you want to get through. You want to get through your school. You want to graduate from school. Hey, just do this for me, and you'll get through. And everyone's like, oh yeah, okay, I'll do that for you. I'll work for you. And I'm not even talking about Rabbit or Alfred Vaz or these other operatives. I'm talking about like people to each other, just controlling each other in this really sort of basic way. Then on top of that, you have this layer of alternative realities. Like I said before, this guy who gets jacked, you know, his personality gets jacked and he doesn't know what's going on. But there's lots of other times when people think they're doing something or they think they're seeing this, and then they turn it off and they realize actually something else is going on as well. At one point, these people are in a car and they're like, we want to stop the car right here. And the car's going, no, sorry, I'm not allowed to stop here. I've got to drive down here. And they're like, no, turn right. And it's going, no, I can't turn right. I'm turning left. And this isn't some big conspiracy by Alfred Vass or by Rabbit or anyone controlling. It's just actually society. People are completely controlled by the technology. They're controlled by others. They're being controlled by the technology, knowingly and willingly in some cases, and other ways, in ways that they don't like but just go with, and other ways not, and stuff like that. So there's all these different layers of control, and all these characters moving around in it. They have their motivations, but they're being manipulated at every turn. And this is even without any mind control, direct mind control. And I thought this whole idea was really, really interesting. And that's one of the main themes that I got from this novel, one of the main sort of like points that Werner Vinge was obviously making. I mean, maybe not obviously making, but just the idea that this generic threat that was going on didn't have to be mind control. That was actually quite a minor part. That was like the almost the MacGuffin to get people moving towards something, but it speaks directly to the actual control that was going on towards this end goal. Also, the what are the other theme here? I've lost my place in this notes. I've only got like few lines of notes here. Oh yeah, this whole idea of people working together to make something cool in the future, something amazing. Like I say, Wikipedia has shown that people coming together and collaborating does work out. However, I do think the stats on this do show that Wikipedia is very much a fringe case on society as a whole. Now, Werner Vinge pretty much shows that everyone in the world, their idea of entertainment is coming together and creating stuff. And everyone just seems to take this as natural, and this is what people do. Now, this is what I do. I create stuff and come up with stuff. This is what my life revolves around, is actually my creative output. You know, other stuff as well, but generally that's what I work on and I work towards, and that's what I get paid for and everything like that, and that's great. Werner Vinge is the same. Probably most people at Werner Vinge know are the same. Most people that I know are pretty similar as well. We're all sort of like nerds and geeks in our own way, working on our own things. However, the vast majority of the world's population isn't like that at all. They just want a job and they just want to live and they just want to get on with it. I read this study once and it showed that how much work has been put into Wikipedia. It's like millions upon millions upon millions of hours have been spent by millions of people into creating Wikipedia. You know, millions upon millions of hours, which sounds like a lot. And then it compared that to how many people in an hour in North America watch adverts, and it turns out to be around about what, like 8 minutes or something every half hour. So let's just say, you know, like 10 minutes of adverts or product placements or something like that while just watching television of an hour. So in one evening in America, for the amount of time that it takes the TV population watching the TV watching population of America to watch adverts in one night is about the same amount of time that it takes to build a project of about the same size of Wikipedia. And that's like just watching adverts in one evening of one nation. Sure, a big nation who watches a lot of television and a lot of adverts, but it's that kind of thing. Now, that's the way the world actually works. And people who sit there and actually contribute to Wikipedia are this tiny, tiny little fraction of people. You know, it's always going to be like the 95% who do nothing and then the 5% who actually do the stuff that everyone else consumes and watches, which is great. I mean, that's the way it works, you know, in a way that you could think of that the people who are creative, like me in a way, we're edifying the lives of other people who aren't creative, and their hard work pays for us to be creative. That's how, you know, that's how my job works. People pay me to entertain them, and I entertain them in return for money, and that's great. And if they didn't earn the money in the first place, if everyone was creative, you know, if everyone used these micropayments and stuff like that. So while I do like the idea of everyone just working creatively on everything like that in the future, I'm not quite sure that it really bears out by the data that we see today. Just because technology gets easier, sure, the iPad is coming out, or is out in America, but it's going to come out around the world, and loads of people are going to get into computing that have never done it before, and that's great. But you know what they're going to do? They're going to watch YouTube videos, and they're going to send emails and stuff like that. Those kind of people who aren't creative, you know, unless you're brought up that way, you know, from a very young age. And maybe that's what Vernovinge is saying, that once computers get ubiquitous in the future, everyone will be like this. However, that's one of the main reasons why I thought 2025, you know, just 20 years in the future after this book was written, I thought was a little bit optimistic in that view. So, final point here. Oh, I mentioned that earlier on in my review. I mentioned it in passing. So, as a conclusion, I thought this book was very good. Actually, because I read it, I thought this is actually one of the best books that I've listened to in a long time, because I read it really quickly. I listened to it really quickly. I was doing other things. I was really caught up with the technology. I was really caught up in the idea, this whole kind of manipulation, what's individuality, all these different levels of reality and manipulation going on there. I was really enjoying all of that. The technology was really good, that I didn't actually quite work out how much that these things didn't really make sense, and a few of the things like the pacing and the writing and these other things which I wasn't really enjoying, which were a bit clunky, didn't really get to me, because I was always just going along with the reading or the listening of the book as well. So as soon as I finished it, I went on to Goodreads, went, okay, finish this book, I'll put up the review soon. Of course, it's taking me like 5 days to get there. And I put 5 stars in. I didn't actually think it was a 5-star book. I was thinking maybe 4.5 stars. A very good book, though, like a top-rated book, one of the best books I've read recently, to be sure. But then it was actually reading, like thinking about it afterwards, where I was thinking, okay, maybe it wasn't so good. And I kept on thinking of all the stuff that I didn't enjoy about it. Like the pacing was a bit off, and some of the characters were a bit meh, and these other bits and pieces. So I thought, okay, maybe 4-star book. But I do actually think it's a bit better than that. So, because it is better than other 4-star books that I've reviewed recently. I enjoyed the reading, and I enjoyed the thinking about it, and enjoyed the discussion, even just this podcast that I've done. It's been, you know, one of the longer ones that I've done recently, mainly because the book gave me a lot more to think about and a lot more to read about, more to talk about, more to think about and to discuss, which is always a good thing as well. So I'm probably going to give it maybe like 4.2 stars, just to bump it above the other 4-star books, but a little bit below the other 4.5-star books. It's a pity that it's not a 5-star book. It could have been, maybe if the pacing was a bit better, and some of the writing had been tightened up. Put it this way, with an editor, this book for me could have been a 5-star book, but it didn't. It didn't have that editor. Maybe Vernovinge, because he's like won. I think he's won. This is his third Hugo Award-winning book now. People just say, "Oh, he doesn't need an editor." But I think in this book, maybe he did a bit. Whereas his other books, like The Peace War, thoroughly enjoyed that. And of course, Deepness in the Sky and Fire Upon the Deep. Again, two of my favorite science fiction books ever. So I'm definitely going to check out, I think Marooned in Real Time is the last of his novels. I think it's the last of his novels that I have yet to read. So I'll definitely check that out in the future too. But 4.2 stars, very, very good book. I would recommend it. I know some people mentioned back to me on goodreads.com, oh, I couldn't get into this book, I don't understand what it's about. Maybe after listening to this review and reading it again through my eyes or with my own spin on it and the way that I looked at this, maybe you can read it and get a lot more out of it. I know I found it very, very interesting. So, what was I going to say? Oh, the next book that I was going to read, probably going to give up on Doomsday Book. I might actually do it. There's quite a few books that I started reading and not finished. So I'm thinking what I'm going to do is do like a roundup of books Luke has started and hasn't finished reading recently, because there's been a few of them. So I might do a podcast like that over the next few weeks, probably when I go away in June again on my next cruise when I have a bit more time. So I did just download my next Audible book that I'm reading is Calculating God by Robert J. Sawyer. I read one of his books. It was a book called Hominids, and I thought it was absolutely atrocious, but I always like to give an author a second chance in case that was just a one-off book which didn't appeal to me, and this is a book that comes recommended, highly recommended by... Well, put it this way. Every time I've said, hey, what's a Robert J. Sawyer book which I should read, like a standalone book which I should read, and everyone's just said, oh, this book, and I'm like, okay, I'll read that one. And the other book that I'm reading, after about 1,000 recommendations, probably one of the most recommended books to me. It's not even a science fiction book, it's a fantasy book, which is A Game of Thrones by George R.R. Martin. I've started that, and it's a paper book. I'm actually reading it on paper because I didn't want to pay for it as an electronic book, and I didn't want to pay for it, you know, it's 2 credits to read that book or listen to that book on Audible, and I didn't want to commit to 2 credits to get a book that I wasn't quite sure if I was going to enjoy. So I went around to the secondhand bookshop and picked it up And it's pretty much free when I borrow books from there, because, you know, I take them back and it's either €1.50 or I just take back another book that I've bought and pay for the book I'm borrowing with the book that I've bought new just by giving it to the bookshop there. So I've started that. I'm around about, 50 pages into it, enjoying it quite a bit already. It seems to be quite a slow starter, but I'm finding it quite interesting as well. That's about it. So you can... what do I normally say here? Oh, mine's going blank. Oh, yeah, follow me on Twitter. I'm at Luke Burge on Twitter. I give updates there as well. Best thing to do is actually become my friend on goodreads.com/Luke Burge. Become my friend and follow my reviews on there as well. You can see me, like, what I'm thinking as I read books, and I, you know, I write down when I finish a book and what you can expect as the next episode and stuff on there too. And also, if you become my friend, I can see what you're reading, and it's good to sort of see, like, a general overview of what SFBRP listeners are listening to as well. Otherwise, you can email me, luke@juggler.net. Please email me with any feedback or book suggestions or anything like that. One of the easiest things to do is email me the book suggestion by email, and then I'll just add it to my own goodreads.com list. But then you can sort of give a little bit more explanation of why you think I should read that book. luke@juggler.net is the address there. Did I just say my other email address? No. Only send emails to luke@juggler.net. That's the easiest way. Otherwise, you can read my blog, lukeburge.com/blog. Lots of updates on there as well. Actually, less updates when I'm at home. When I'm traveling, I write more to put on my blog. But when I'm at home, but I will be putting up some more photography and related stuff and writing stuff as well on there as well. Talking of writing, check out my books, especially if you like the idea of alternative reality and stuff like that. That is one of the sort of technologies that I talk about or describe and put my own spin on in the book Minding Tomorrow, which was the first novel that I released online. Definitely check that out, especially if you liked this book, Rainbow's the End. And even if you didn't, check out my own take on similar themes. You know, the whole idea of you know, I got this in an email from someone who actually as a listener who actually really likes alternative reality and loved Rainbow's End. And I said, well, if you like that, a lot of the same themes and ideas are covered in my book Minding Tomorrow, in a different way, with a different spin, but one that I quite enjoyed writing and other people seem to quite enjoy reading. So check that out, lukeburge.com/fiction.html. That's it. Oh, it's been a long one. I just checked now the time here. 55 minutes. Wow, a long one after like the sub-half-hour episodes that I've been doing recently. But this book has really inspired me to get back into the reviewing and stuff like that. So hopefully the next episode will be along shortly. Otherwise, catch you next time.